Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 7, delivered on September 12, 2017. The title of this lecture is Time Value of Money.
Tonight, the time value of money. Start with a simple question. Sir, I'm going to give you $100. Now, I can give it to you right now, or I can give it to you in 1 year. Which would you like? Right now. Okay, fine. Madam? Right now? Right now? Okay. In other words, inside we have the sense that money now is worth more than money later. In finance, we actually turn that into a quantitative exercise. Okay, you've got these cash flows from a project. You're going to make cash every year off it. The cash flows way out there aren't worth as much as the cash flows that are closer in. And we do the math of it. It's the basic one for finding the present value of a future lump sum is arithmetic, and you do that on your calculator, just straight up on a scientific calculator. The one that is for a stream of money, there's apps. There's one, the Pearson calculator has the app. The TI-83 has the app. Even a BA-2 can do it. But the first things first. This lecture is about the time value of money. But in order to do this, I have to bring up two really important concepts that are in finance, but also more broadly in business, in economics, and all of that. The first one is the valuation principle. It has an important assumption that sometimes isn't there, but the principle still holds. The principle holds that in a competitive market, the price is the value. That's putting it in a nutshell. In a competitive market, the price is the value. There is no difference. So what that means is that in stock markets, in bond markets, in securities markets, we're talking about millions of traders, literally trillions of trades, using the most sophisticated information systems available in a brutally, viciously competitive environment. The stock price is going to be the value of the stock. Hearing some financial guru on TV say, well, this stock is undervalued, you show me how in the heck that could happen. How could the price not be reflecting the value? Sir, what are you worth? What's your value? Well, I'll tell you what right now, it will most likely be the present value of the future expected cash flows from your salary. Well, they don't pay me what I'm worth. Why not? Oh, because my mom says I'm worth many, many millions and millions of dollars. No, you're not. You're worth what you get. If you think you're worth more, go get it. If you can't, there's Clouville calling you. You ain't worth that. This is a competitive market in action. At the retail level of gasoline, you drive down a street, you'll see the prices of gasoline about the same from one station. Well, they're obviously colluding. No, they're not. It's a competitive market at the retail level. At the upper levels, no. But at the retail level, it's a competitive market. The value of the gasoline is the price you're seeing, and that's why you see the prices being about the same. Now, you'll see a few pennies difference, but not a whole lot. The farmer who is selling his grain, his corn to market in here in Bloomington and Normal. That value of that corn is going to be the same here as it is going to be in other places all across the country. The price represents the value of the crop. This is a very important principle because this drives us to, if we want to think that some value is more than the price we're seeing, the first thing we have to ask ourselves is, how could that be happening? Show me the mechanism by which there could be a defect in the market. Now, that doesn't mean that there are prices that differ radically. For example, pharmaceuticals in the United States are vastly more expensive than they are in other countries around the world. The same medicines, life-saving medicines, life-bettering medicines. You go to Canada, go to Mexico, go over to Europe, you'll find that they are incredibly cheaper than they are here. So does that invalidate the valuation principle? No. That tells us that we have non-competitive forces in action. In a good world, in the world that we envisioned for our economic system in the 20th century, we tried to keep that from happening by making severe laws against price collusion, against oligopolies, against non-competitive markets. We gave up. And so now you do have markets where price does not reflect value because the markets are non-competitive. And so this is a place where there could be differences, and therefore there could be opportunities for arbitrage. But in general, for finance, in securities markets, price and value are going to be the same. But let me get back to this thing about what you're worth. If we can find the future of the present value of your future expected cash flows from your best job that you could get with your skill sets and all of that and your learning curve that you'll be on, that would be the value of you to the economy. And that would also be what you would probably want to buy in insurance for yourself. So a term life insurance policy that you would buy right now, when all of your cash flows are in front of you, but the biggest ones are well out there so that they would not have as much value, that would probably be a different amount that you would insure yourself for than what you would do if what you would get for insurance when you were, let's say, 50 years old. You would be in the deepest part of your high cash flow stream, but it wouldn't be very long before you'd be retiring and living on cat food. So we would probably want to sell you a lower insurance policy, a lower value insurance policy than we would now. Give you an idea. In the U.S. military, there's a life insurance policy on every soldier. And right now, I think that they dropped the value by a couple of $1 million. I think that the value of a soldier's life, usually about the age of 20 years old, is $6 million. Yeah, the survivors would get, I think it's $6 million for the dead soldier. So that tells you what they're doing is they're valuing the present value of all of the soldiers' future expected cash flows. Telescope back to now would be about $6 million. Now, if you are at the officer rank, it would probably be more because you are being paid more. You have higher skill sets so that when you leave the armed forces, you would have a higher paying job coming out. So they probably would have a higher life insurance policy provided to them by the U.S. government. Valuation principle. Now, the next one again assumes competitive markets, which are okay for us to do in finance, at least theoretically. This is called the law of one price. The law of one price. In a competitive market, an asset's price will be uniform. In a competitive market, an asset's price will be uniform across space. In other words, the price in one market will be the same as the price in another market. So if you think, well, I'm going to bargain hunt, I'm going to find a lower price, well, you might, and that might mean one of two things. One is that it's not a competitive market. Two is that there is some hidden cost that you're not really recognizing when you buy it from the cheaper place. A good example, I buy things on eBay. Yes, I am an eBay hoe. I will be there all the time beating out those stupid people who try to jump my bid at the last minute. I will take them out. Those are lower. Sometimes I get a lower price. But I'm also taking a higher risk. So it's not the same asset I'm buying. Because the asset I buy at the lower price, it's the same thing I'd get on Amazon for a higher price. But because I'm buying it on eBay at a lower price, I'm also buying risk associated with the people who sell on eBay. Some of them are legitimate, but it does not have the uniformity of legitimacy, and therefore there's higher risk, so the prices are going to be lower to reflect the greater risk that you take in buying from that market. In general, though, unless you can show me that there is a true market defect, price is going to be uniform from one place to the other, across actually, maybe even across the world. There are some excellent examples of how we use the law of one price. One thing we can do is figure out the actual comparative value of two currencies. I'll talk about this later, so you don't need to write it down, but it's called purchasing power parity. We will create, sort of theoretically, a market basket of goods for a consumer in the United States and the same market basket of goods for, let's say, a consumer in China. And we'll compare how much it costs in the Chinese currency and how much it costs in the American currency. And by the law of one price, we know that those two prices have to be the same, and that gives us exactly how much what the relative trading value of the two currencies is, the currency exchange rate, the purchasing power parity exchange rate. And then we look at the real one, and we can see how much the countries are distorting their currencies through manipulating their currency values. For example, we knew that, some pretty serious research gave us the indication some years back that the purchasing power parity exchange rate between one U.S. dollar, I didn't write that correctly, one USD dollar, USD one, purchasing power parity by the law of one price meant that against the Chinese currency, yuan, was about one US dollar equal 2.50 yuan. However, the Chinese were manipulating the currency. They were pegging it. And they were aggressively, the People's Bank of China was aggressively pegging the Chinese currency at one USD consistently, was staying at one USD to 8.26 yuan. In other words, Chinese goods were actually artificially lower in price to the extent of being about a third of what they should have been priced. Well, actually, less than a third. So, in other words, the Chinese were creating an artificial low price on their imports to the United States, a price that was less than a third of what it should have been under the law of one price under purchasing power parity. And that was why the Chinese were just destroying a lot of our industries. We were exporting dollars to them in massive amounts because of this deviation that they were actually doing deliberately over a period of quite a few years on the law of one price. Why were we making them do this? Why were we letting them do this? Well, there were two reasons that one followed the other. The first reason we allowed it in the 1990s was that we believed that if we let the Chinese do this, their industrial base would grow very rapidly, and there would be a middle class of Chinese entrepreneurs, business people, and citizens who would rise up in economic freedom and then demand political freedom, and we could essentially wreck the communist Chinese government from the inside out through the demands for political freedom of this rising middle class. Didn't work out. Turned out the Chinese were quite powerful at keeping protests under control. We finally stopped doing that during the Bush administration, and we understood there was a much more important reason, and I talked about that in the lecture before this. We understood that, okay, well, we're not going to reform the Chinese, but we should let them keep doing this, because as long as we keep exporting dollars to them by buying their really underpriced imports, what we do is we have this giant pool of money over there in the People's Bank of China to lend to us so that we can run massive budget deficits, borrow more than we can possibly get in taxes. We can allow our citizens to borrow massive amounts of money at low interest rates so that they can live beyond their means and be happy and not realize wages are stagnant, have been stagnant for a half a century. We can do all of this if we let the Chinese lend us all this money that we've exported to them from them selling us cheap goods. That was the second reason, the follow-up reason. We finally began to say, this is enough of this, in the late 2000s, 2009, 2010. And by then, the Chinese were going to quit anyway, because printing that many yuan to keep that peg was sooner or later going to cause a huge, massive hyperinflation in China, which is started, and the Chinese have backed off this peg. It's still not down here around purchasing power parity, but at least the Chinese are now laying off the strict peg simply because it's in their interest to stop doing this now. The economy of China is already massively growing and huge, and they don't need to do what they've been doing all along for years. Now, moving back, valuation principle and the law of one price. These are kind of subtle, and like I said, one of the things you can always do, first of all, if you do see two prices that are the price of the same asset different in two places, you ask yourself, how could this happen? Okay, it could be a non-competitive market. Okay, that's a possibility. But it also could be that there's something hidden in that lower price that makes it not the bargain that it seems to be. Well, obviously, a movie ticket is cheaper during the day than it is at night. That blows the law of one price. No, it doesn't. Because if you go to the movie theater during the day, it's a lot nastier place. And it's also a place where you are probably not going to get the service. You're probably not going to get the nice warm air or the nice cool air. You're probably going to get dirtier theaters because they don't hire as many people. So they can actually change the price. It's called price discrimination, and target specific markets for different prices. But the law of one price still holds. This has to do with the time value of money. In the following way, we can have, when we're looking at projects to consider whether we're going to say yes or no to those projects, we can have a certain amount of certainty that the valuation we do on a project would be consistent with any other company's valuation of that same product if they are being as rational as we were. If they make mistakes, or if they find a value that's higher, therefore they're willing to pay a higher price, we would have to ask ourselves, did we do something wrong, or are they doing something wrong? Not, well, both prices are okay. No. One or the other is right. And we go to say, all right, which one is it? Did we screw up our calculation? Are we missing something? Or did they screw up their calculation? Are they missing something? Okay. Now, let me get down to the basics. There's a formula here. It's nothing, not a complicated one. The one I show you tonight is for a lump sum of money. In other words, a one-shot deal of money out there somewhere that we want to know what it's worth now. So we say that the opposite. How much is something that's here now worth out there at a certain investment rate? The formula works like this. The future value of a lump sum of money is its present value, its price value, its current value, times 1 plus the interest rate to the t power. Now here, this interest rate is the periodic interest rate. It's the opportunity cost of that money. And this T up here in the exponent is the number of periods. So in other words, know this and put this in your notes. Unless I would very rarely, and I don't think there are hardly any times I would do it, unless I say differently, when I say the interest rate is, I'm talking about an annual rate, an APR, an annual percentage rate. So if I were to tell you, for example, that the APR is 12%, for annual compounding, if the compounding is annual, then the R would be 12% divided by 1. If I told you that it was semi-annual compounding, the number, and the T would be 1. Semi-annual, the R would be 12% divided by 2, which is 6%, and the T would be 2 times 1. For a 1 year annual, for 1 year. If I told you that the rate was compounded quarterly, the R would be 12% divided by 4, which is 3%. If I told you that it was monthly compounding, it would be 12% divided by 12, which would be 1% per period. And if I told you it was weekly, okay, real quick, how many weeks are in a year? 52. I put on a test a couple of times, it's compounded weekly, and I had droves of students say, how many weeks are in a year? Yeah, really? Okay. Now here, by the way, quick note, 12% for weekly, 12% divided by 52. When you put this into a calculator, don't calculate the periodic interest rate and then put it in. Just string the calculation in, because if you calculate it and then write it down and then put it back into your calculator, you're going to get rounding error, because exponents blow up rounding error like you wouldn't believe. So just key it in. I'm going to do a problem here in just a minute. Okay? So, through the grinder, you have $5,000 to invest at 6.8% APR compounded monthly. No, compounded quarterly. Let's just do quarterly. How much will be in the account in 8 years. In 8 years. Okay, so nothing hard about the problem. All you're going to do is the future value is going to be 5,000 times 1 plus 0.068. And don't forget, if you're doing arithmetic straight up, it's the decimal. If you're using any app that I know of, you would actually just put in the interest rate. But it'll be 0.068 over 4 to the 4 times 8, 32 periods. In other words, this amount is going to compound a total of 32 times over 8 years. And then from there, it's just putting the thing into the grinder. Bear with me. I'm going to just key it in and make sure that if you've got a calculator, for heaven's sakes, do this with me. Just make sure you can do it right. And it really is pretty easy to make a mistake doing this. Just key in something accidentally wrong. Okay, let me see if I can find that thing. Wish that calculator could be made bigger. Okay, well, I'm not going to be able to do it. So I'm going to put this up here on the overhead. And real quick, I'm just going to string it in as a calculation. And don't stop along the way and write numbers down, if possible. And one thing I'm going to caution you, business calculators don't understand order of operations in arithmetic. So if you tried to do this with a BA2 or something like that, you're going to get the wrong answer because they don't understand that multiplications come before additions and exponents come before everything else. So when you do this, it's probably going to be best for you to do it this way. So I'm going to just run in $5,000 times, open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.068 divided by 4, close the parentheses, raise it to the power, open parentheses, 4 times 8, close the parentheses, equals $8,575.13. 85, 75, 13. 85, 75, 13. That's all there is to it. Now, one thing that I will tell you this, and you'll hear me say this a couple of times. Finance formulas, you either will get the right answer or the answer will look really wrong. I would ask myself, does this look like the right answer? Does this look about right? It does. If I had keyed something in wrong, this number would have looked way wrong, either ridiculously tiny or ridiculously huge. So that's one of the nice things about finance formulas. They'll give you an answer that makes sense, at least usually. In the next lecture, I'm going to show you how you can calculate monthly loan payments. I did this once on a test, and one of the students got an answer for the monthly car payment on an $18,000 car. She got a monthly payment on a 5-year loan of $10,000 or something like that. And I just said, does that make sense to you? And she said, well, I don't know. My dad pays my car payment. Okay. I didn't even bother after that. But ask yourself, does this make sense? Yeah. If I hold money for 8 years in an account, five grand. Yeah, that's probably about right at that interest rate. Okay, so there's the first round, the lump sum of the future value of a lump sum. So that would mean that you could say, all right, I put this amount in now, and I'm going to hold that amount for, let's say, 5 years or 10 years. What am I going to have in the account at that time, given my APR and the number of compoundings per year? You can find that now. The flip side is that the present value formula can be turned over to say, if I turn this problem formula around, the present value of a future lump sum is the future value times one, whoops, I'm sorry. The future value over 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. Now, there's another way to write this that I kind of recommend. It's your call. But if you remember from your dark math past, a denominator is the numerator to the negative of the exponent. I usually run the formula this way because it avoids doing a complicated denominator that might get me in trouble keying it in right. So I just usually just run it straight through like this. So now we come to a kind of a practical thing. Sir, you have just had your first child. And you are all excited because the child came from the womb, a genius. And you realize, I have got to find someone who will give me enough money now so that I can finance his whole Harvard education when he gets to be 18. Well, it turns out that I am your filthy rich uncle. How much do you need to make this dream come true? So the question there would be, well, I figure that on his 18th birthday, I'm going to pay for all 4 years at once. And we can vary this. I'll show you how to get it a little more realistic. But for now, I want to have in the bank $250,000. And just go to Harvard and give them the money and say, make this child an educated citizen of the world. And you figure, okay, I've got this account. If I put the money in there and I don't touch it, and I'm going to tell them 18 years, so they're going to give me a decent interest rate. My APR is going to be, they will give me on this money, is 7.29% compounded monthly. So I can now say, how much do I need now? What present value, what price value do I need right now to achieve 250 grand at 1 plus 0.0729 over 12 to the negative 12 times 18 power, 18 years? Now be cautious because the parentheses are important. The parentheses are important here. So I'm going to key in $250,000 times open parenthesis 1 plus 0.0729 divided by 12, close the parentheses, and now raise it. Open parentheses, hit the negative sign. Don't hit the minus sign. Use the negative sign. On a TI-83, you can use the negative sign in front. If you got something like a lower level calculator, you have to hit the posneg key after the number. But with the TI, you can put the negative up front. To the negative 12 times 18, close the parentheses, and say equals. $67,574.50. $67,574.50. Now you see a quick mention about financial planning. That is something that's kind of doable. When you look at $250,000, that's like breathtakingly large money. But if you plan far enough ahead, and that's what financial planning is all about when we talk to people about their plans, plan far enough ahead that it's not going to knock your socks off when we tell you how much you have to put in the bank. And in this case, and also the other thing is, don't get tempted by that money sitting there in 5 years, 8 years. Oh, I want a boat, or I want to put a down payment on a vacation home. Leave it alone, because otherwise, and that's what happens. We get these clients and we go to them after 10 years. Oh, well, we spent that money. We tapped that for 20 grand because we wanted to buy a new car. Now you are really in a problem, because in order to bring us back on track for your kids' education with 8 years left, you're going to have to put a hellacious amount of money in right now. So you might as well just sell that car or tell your kid to go to Heartland Community College, one or the other, or Illinois Wesleyan. Sorry, that was harsh. Okay. They'll give scholarships to anyone. I shouldn't say that. I'll have to edit that out. So if you say he said that, I'll say, look at the podcast. It's not there. But anyway, but you see, this is actually what I'm showing you here is the basis of financial planning. The next step would be to ask questions about, well, suppose that we want to put money in installments so that by the end, we have put money in every year into like an IRA account or an education savings fund or something like that. Other accounts, there are other ones too, like there are these medical savings accounts where you can put money in every year. And what happens is that over time, you're most likely to have your severe, very costly illnesses down the road in your late 40s and your 50s and your 60s. With MSAs, if you're putting in consistent money, then what that means is that down the road, when you do have, in your case, you have that prostate cancer. I know, right? It's bad. But we've got the money there to pay for it so that you can live on. You live on sadly, but you live on. So that you, madam, right now, you're fine. But when you're 55 years old and you look at yourself, you think, Botox ain't going to do this. We're going to have to go full plastic. And it's going to be enough that we can pour goop all over. Okay? So that means that you can actually plan for when you need to turn back the clock of time. Okay? So you say, all right, at 55, I'm going to look... Yeah, I'm going to look like Hillary. Okay, so I didn't mean that. Okay, but so what you can do is you can plan for that. You can do things like plan, okay, when I'm 50 years old, I'm going to have a very big gut, and I'm going to be have a heart disease, diabetes. Okay, so I'm going to have to fix that. I'm going to go to one of those clinics in Switzerland and become really good again, good looking again. They're going to charge me $1 million. Okay, I start planning for that now. And then I'll go over there and I will come back looking exactly like Tom Hiddleston. Wow, that was a mistake. Okay. You see, this is financial planning. Now, the next thing that goes on in this, and it works sort of like this, is that over a period of time, you might find that, I don't know, let's do this. Let's do it like this. Okay. you want to buy a house. Now, typically, you're going to plan for your first house. Sir, when do you figure you're going to be in a position where you are married and you have to start looking at houses? 24. Let's try 30, 35, man. You got a few years to enjoy yourself. Okay, 24. Okay, whoa, no. We're not going to do that. I'm going to give you some mercy. Dude, don't, seriously. Okay. Let's say that now we're fine. Interestingly enough, there was a study that was done this, and it was just published this week, last week, finding that both men and women are postponing first childbearing. And we've known that with women for years. They have the opportunity cost is just too high early in their careers. What we didn't expect was to see that men were postponing their first child into now their 40s. That's pretty rough. You know, your kid's 15 and you're an old geezer. I mean, like me, trust me, it happened. And I mean, she wouldn't even let me drive her to school. She was afraid someone would see that I was her dad. Okay, now anyway. So what you can do in this position is that if, let's say I want to, you figure that you're going to want to buy your first house, a decent, a nice house, not something that is ugly, not something that is in a bad, like Naperville. You want something in Schaumburg. That was no disrespect to Naperville. That was not disrespectful to Naperville. It's a nice place. I've been mugged there. Okay? But it's better than Rockford. I mean, but anyway. Look. This is where financial planning begins to bite, because when you go to buy a house, the lower the loan-to-value ratio, the better the deal you're going to get. In fact, if you can get a loan-to-value ratio of 80% or below, a big chunk of your payment disappears because they can't make you buy mortgage insurance. So let's say that you would like to get, as a first home in a nice neighborhood with a good school and all that, it's going to cost you, let's say, $200,000. So what you're going to do is target a 20% down payment on that loan, which would mean that you want to have in the bank $40,000. And that way, when you go to borrow the money, right off the bat, you're going to be in a better position for the lender. This house is worth $200,000. We're asking you to lend us only $160,000. That gives the bank a safe zone. They feel good about this because that means that it is very unlikely that the loan is ever going to go upside down. The term upside down means that the loan amount due, still on the balance, is higher than the asset value. They don't want that to happen. The farther down the amount they lend you from the asset value, the less the probability that the loan will ever go upside down on you. So they're going to be happy with this. The question is, how much would I have to put in right now? If you're, about 20, 21, let's say 9 years, and you could go to your parents or to, someone like me, a very aggressive lender, or something, or you could do something, signing bonus. How much would I need right now so that 9 years from now it would be $40,000? Easy question. 9 years? Now we could put it into a 9-year deposit certificate of some kind. And let's say we could pull from that one a 6.49% APR, And over 9 years, let's say that it compounds, you could work it out so that you could get compounding weekly. Okay, this is a present value of a lump sum problem. The present value is going to be, let me get this up here high on the board so you can see it in the back. Present value is going to be 40 grand out there in 9 years times 1 plus 0.0649 over 52 to the negative 52 weeks per year for 9 years. And this, again, is going to show you the power of planning well ahead. We're the educated people. We're the professionals. We're the ones who aren't the screw-ups. We know the consequences of planning and prudence. And so that means that we can prepare better for it than people who don't have this kind of knowledge. Really? This calculator turned off. Why? What, am I going to use up the battery in the computer? Look, do you see it? It turned itself off. God. That makes my large intestine inflamed when it does that. Okay, now. Shut up. $40,000 times open parentheses 1 plus 0.0649 divided by 52, close the parenthesis to the open parenthesis negative 52 weeks per year for 9 years, close the parenthesis equals $22,312.42. $22,312.42. That's what you would put away and leave it alone for 9 years. So that in those 9 years, you would have $40,000 for a down payment on a house. Again, financial planning. This is how we are trying to, this is why we're reaching out to the communities now with these financial literacy programs and education seminars, is so that we can show people, if you control yourself, and you can put money away now instead of just spending it on something silly, you have money for something very important to you later on down the road. And if we, and that kind of, quite honestly, the way we plan a family, we go to a family, we want to do financial planning for them. We look at all the different goals they have at different life stages. Okay, you want your first house at 30. You're a professional couple. You want your first house at 30. You want to have a new car every 3 years. You're planning to have 3 kids. You're planning to have them all go to college after they've gone through drug rehab and all of that. And then we work our way through it, and then we simply lay out, all right, here is what you have to put away now and each month or each year, whatever, so that all of these goals can be achieved without breaking a sweat. And as long as they stick to the plan, it's like their lives are so much better because they're not stressed. God, I wanted that new car. My car's dying. Or I wish we could have had a new house because this house is falling apart. All of those we can take the stress off if we can show them how to walk the path by looking from way back at the time we're talking to them and getting it all set up so that it works like a clock as they go through their lives. If they can listen to us, we have the skill sets to do this. This is financial planning. If you're interested in it, I can direct you. We have a great center. We now have a center for financial planning. We have a minor in financial planning. And so, and I'm going to also be taking you guys in my club to a place that gets you your certifications for financial planning. So that is all I have for you tonight. I thank you.